In the depths of the darkness below the earth, there waits a plethora of monsters and hazards for adventurers, but no hazard compares to the sinister machinations of the dreaded Drow, which reach all the way to the surface world, disrupting alliances and toppling governments. The Dark Elves reach out from the darkness, influencing the hearts and minds of man and elf alike, to bend them to the will of their fiendish matron, Loth. Welcome back to Legends and Lore. I'm Ren Azuo, here with my fellow lore keeper, Tom Sweeney, and today we're talking about the Drow, a longtime staple of Dungeons & Dragons, and the various games and worlds that spun off from it. Now, that being said, I'm pretty sure that's not how you say machinations or machinations. I don't know.
I think it's machinations, bud.
Is it machinations?
You did good, though. Machinations sounds fantastic. Don't anyone ever tell you otherwise.
Machinations.
Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, dude. I like that better.
I'm going to die on the machinations hill. All right, so the Drow have been one that we've been wanting to hit for a while. They've been kind of like circling our poles in one way or another for quite a while now. And I know, Sweeney, you're pretty passionate about the Drow in general.
I am a huge... Now, let me be clear before all of our D&D fans be like, you're a huge Drow fan. I'm a huge Drow fan in context of the Forgotten Realms and Eberron. Unfortunately, I started playing D&D in 5e, so I did not get all of the luscious Greyhawk information or Owarth information. But I am a huge, huge fan of the Drow because of one of my favorite characters in literature being Dritz Do'Urden. Mm-hmm. So everyone in the comments, please attack me. Call me the worst Drow fan ever.
Come at me, bro.
Come at me. I'm ready to deal with all of the disrespect that's going to come from it.
So when I was in high school, I want to say late high school was around this when this was happening. I was doing a lot of like online role playing kind of stuff, you know, because I had just gotten AOL and internet because I lived out in Maine. All this stuff came like years late, you know, and a lot of the Dritz books were just blowing up. You know, I mean, they had been popular for years, but, you know, once you hit the internet, things kind of take on like a second life. They get like a different culture entirely. So what started happening is you started seeing a lot of people playing the good Drow, you know, and it got to a point where anytime you mentioned the Drow, anytime you spoke about the Drow, you'd get people who are just kind of rolling their eyes like, oh, not these assholes again. I've heard enough about the Drow. And but then another book would come out, you know, with Drow on the cover, and then you just back into it, you know. So
of course
it lasted for like a long time. But that putting all of that that kind of aside, I think that they've got a pretty rich lore, and there are certain things that some people I think might think are common to all the Drow mythology, but isn't. Like, it really changes depending on which world and campaign setting you're doing.
They're super different. The most commonly known is the Drow that went into the Underdark with the Forgotten Realms group, which is after the rebellion of Loth, I'm pretty sure, and her... I don't know exactly if it's the matrimony or some sort of affiliation with Asmodeus, if I'm not mistaken. That is when she took her little elfie boys and she went into the Underdark, and that's where we get the Drows from the Crystal Shard series and all that stuff. Like the not Neverwinter, but the Icewind Dale stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, so... The base mythology. So there were like three campaign settings that kind of came up within a few years of each other back in first edition and second edition, because the editions for first and second weren't actually that far apart, really. So you get Greyhawk, you get one that I always forget was a thing, and then it gets mentioned and I'm like, oh yeah, which is Mistara,
that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, and then for Forgotten Realms, of course. Greyhawk and Mistara were made around the same time. There's another one, I think it's Blackmoor or something like that, is technically the first campaign setting, but serves as sort of like a distant past for both Greyhawk and Misara, I think.
Okay, gotcha.
I could be wrong on that one, but I think Greyhawk is Gygax's, and Misara is another one of the co-creators' ones, and then Forgotten Realms, I think, is Ed Greenwood.
Ed Greenwood is definitely Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, so Greyhawk kind of provides that base idea of, oh, there was a conflict, there was this elf war. They get into this big disagreement with the other elves, and then they're exiled into the dark. And it's kind of unclear in Greyhawk whether or not Loth was part of that to begin with. If she pops up and takes advantage of them after the fact. But Forgotten Realms is a little more clear, because Forgotten Realms is hyper specific with all of its deities.
Yeah, it is. If you guys don't know, the Forgotten Realms has went through, I think, in the last two editions, or since 2E to 5E, all the gods have become mortal. A lot of them died. Magic got turned off. Magic came back. Magic went crazy. Civilizations fell out the sky. Like, a lot of things have happened in the Forgotten Realms, especially involving the gods. Like, a ton of stuff has happened.
Someone called up Faerun tech support, and the guy was like, I don't know, have you tried turning it off and back on again? Like,
and they just turned them. It's insane. It's the Forgotten Realms are, I would say by now, because of 5E, it might be the most fleshed out campaign setting. Maybe.
I want to say it's probably got, I mean, there's a lot of other ones that are pretty good, but I feel like Forgotten Realms probably has the most amount of detail. With, I mean, you get R.A. Salvatore getting in there, writing his books and throwing
Which he's
in
back
detail.
To doing again, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. After all this time, still at it.
They were like, hey, do you want some money? He was like, to write about Drit some more? Yes.
So I don't think there's anyone listening to this who doesn't know what the Drow are, but in case there are people who are just kind of coming in cold and have no idea.
Okay.
The Drow are the dark elves of Dungeons & Dragons and its various satellite and affiliate games that are kind of adjacent to it. The general appearance for the Drow, imagine an elf, but like jet black skin, maybe sometimes purple. I've seen art of them with purple skin. I've seen it with gray skin, like a very dark gray skin. But otherwise, they have the same general build, height, and other stuff. It's just like their coloration is different. So dark skin, very white hair. And that's your standard Drow. That's what they're going to look like.
And if you guys really don't know what elves look like, elves are, which is, I can't believe people don't know. Just look at Link. But if you guys don't know what elves look like, elves are pretty much typically the size of humans, a little more skinnier. They slightly skinnier, a little bit taller. They tend to be naturally extraordinary, like way more so than people, dexterous. Like, they are quick moving, agile people.
Yeah, the height thing is kind of weird, because depending on the edition, the height kind of changes a little bit. Like, I think of elves as tall, like Tolkien elves.
But yeah, Tolkien elves are way taller. Yeah.
Yeah, but the heights that are given for elves are like between like 5 feet and 5'5". And I'm like, oh wow, that's way smaller than I thought. Like,
I think that's just considering, because it's so weird, because so often, like, you talk to like people who write fantasy, like, I'm not gonna name drop the person, but I talked to this person who wrote fantasy, right? And there's a description of a creature's race in the book of the one that Forgotten Realm, the one that it was the most recently published, and he was like, they publish it like that, but the way I see them, they're the exact same build and size as humans for the most part. So it's very weird how often they change the physical characteristics of things. Because, like, you know, dwarves are slightly shorter than humans, or a little bit shorter than humans. Halflings are extremely tiny. Elves are usually taller than humans. They're taller, but they're thinner.
Yeah, that's how I always think about them.
And then orcs are just very big. They're not very full. Orcs are big.
They're jacked.
And then half orcs are, you know, just a bit bigger than people are. Mm-hmm. But it's so weird because it just depends on who's writing it, when they're putting it out, that I wonder who dictates the size of certain creatures and things, because like, or just the range of height. Because when I think of an elf, I think of an elf being at least like, I'm 6'2", and mm-hmm. I think of an elf being around my height at least.
But just like really willowy. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I imagine them as well. But I guess like I was looking at some of the old, I have one of the old Forgotten Realms books in my closet here. I was just kind of paging through it and all the elves are mad short compared to the humans. And I was like, oh, I forgot that's kind of like how they do it. You know,
they were little peewee people comparatively. Yeah. That's so hilarious.
They're like a half foot shorter than most of the human heights given in the same book. It's weird. But whether they're tall or they're short, they're usually built very willowy, lithe, dexterous. They have an innate stealth capability. The drow take that to like a further extent, and we'll get into why they have like superpower stealth and all this other stuff. They have innate magical abilities, that aren't born from elven kind necessarily.
Not exactly.
And then they train it up as they go. They get dark vision in the newer editions, but in second edition it was called infravision.
Yes, it was. It was the super cool I can see hit signature stuff that I loved about them.
In second edition, you had two forms of vision that don't exist anymore. There was infravision, which was seeing heat, and there was ultravision, which was seeing in ultraviolet. And they don't exist anymore. And one of the reasons they don't exist anymore is because when TSR was writing it, this was kind of, they had sort of a pseudoscientific like ecology sort of approach to designing races and societies and stuff like that. Wizards of the Coast doesn't have that same approach. And there was also the added fact that infravision and ultravision had a lot of weird like exploits that players could take advantage of to get an advantage over these monsters and creatures and stuff like that that were supposed to have an advantage over them. You know, so everyone sees Predator and they're like, oh, I came up with all these ways I can fool infravision now because I saw Schwarzenegger do it in the jungle.
Yep. Exactly. That's the nature of that is the nature of the gamer, man. We're always looking for some way to like get a leg over the enemy.
Yep. Infravision and ultravision, I think they're really cool. I personally want to see them come back because it doesn't matter if players are going to exploit certain things. They're always going to find a way, you know.
That's very true.
But they replaced these things. They collapsed them down into the concept of dark vision, you know, and dark vision is just a magical ability to see in the dark. And there's no other explanation offered for it. And among all the creatures that have dark vision, drow have some of the best dark vision because it extends out. I don't know how far it is in fifth
120
edition. It's still 120. Yeah. Yes. Normally it's 60 for everybody else, but 120 feet for the drow.
For drow, actually, they have even a. So what happens is it's dark vision up to 60 feet, but beyond 30, you can only see in shades of gray, because I'm assuming that they take the whole node for like predators, being that like, oh, a predator has the ability to see in the dark, but eventually, you know, if the light gets weak enough, they cannot distinguish shadow from non shadows, which I guess makes sense to a certain degree. I don't know exactly everything that has to do with vision or the eyeball.
In Pathfinder, they explain dark vision of being like shades of black and gray. And they're like, it doesn't, like they straight up say in the lore, it doesn't make sense to races that don't have dark vision.
it wouldn't make sense.
It's like, it's trying to describe, like, you know how, like, there are insects that can see colors outside of our visuals? Like,
yeah.
It's like trying to explain that.
Insects like, hey, dude, listen, it's like this. And we're like, okay.
Sure. Sure, bud.
All right. Yeah, dude, for sure. I love it, though.
I don't know if this is a thing in 5th edition. Because one of the great things for people who are listening about this podcast is that I am not overly familiar with the lore of 5th edition. I know scraps here and there. I know a lot of stuff from 4th edition and before. So I have to ask about 5th edition stuff. And I find that is better for this mm-hmm. format because it's a conversation rather than a just reciting facts. So,
and for me, I am primarily 5th edition information. I know about D&D in general. I know about the worlds of Dungeons & Dragons. But edition-wise, I got in on 5th. So that's mm-hmm. when I know the best. I understand 4E and I understand 3.5 and 3. 2E is alien to my brain. Like, I still don't understand how it works. There's so much. Like, I was playing with my friend and we were just playing a campaign. He was like, we're going to play 2D because we're going to play Die Vecna Die or something like that. And I was like, all right. And I made a character. And he was like, dude, you want to be a vampire? You want to be like a Strigoing vampire? And I was like, what does that mean? Because there's so much, like, tieflings aren't a race in 2E. They're a variation of human or even orcs. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, tieflings fell into a category of plane touched.
Yeah,
that weren't introduced until Planescape.
Mm-hmm.
And Planescape had tieflings, Genazi, Azamar. I'll say there's a couple more.
And the Gith, right?
Yeah, you had the Gith, Gith Yankee, Gith Azari, because they were separate. I don't know if they're separate now.
They're still, I'm pretty sure. I'm not going to say it. No, they are. The Gith Azari and the Gith Yankee are separate.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of that stuff was introduced in some of the later expansions, and they just, because it was well received, but it was like the back end of that, of second edition, they just brought it in as like baseline third edition for a lot mm-hmm. of that stuff.
That makes sense.
I don't know if this is in fifth edition, but do the drow all still have special gear and poisons and stuff like that, that once it's been above ground for a little while, it just degrades and turns shitty and you can't use it?
No, they no longer have the poison specialization. I know what you're talking about. The whole, like the haziness or the phaziness, whatever it's called, I think.
I don't know how to actually pronounce it because it's an elven word and elven words do not roll off the tongue very well, but it's the fairsress.
I know what it is.
Look it up.
The pronunciation proper.
Yeah, if it's possible to find the pronunciation on this, I would love to know. Oh, God. It's such a goofy word, but it's... Oh, there's actually a Google thing for it, pronunciation. So we're not the first ones.
We are not alone in this.
Yeah, howtopronounce.com. Okay. No, I'm not going to use that one. Fairsres, how you pronounce it? Fairsres.
Fairsres.
Okay, Fairsres. So anyway, yeah. It used to be, I remember it was a thing that went away and then like came back, but then went away again. And this was a game balancing thing for second edition where if you ran into drow, they had all this cool stuff that helped them blend into the dark, go unnoticed, amplify magic, have special poisons that were completely alien to surface dwellers and all this other stuff. And inevitably you're going to get adventurers who drop some drow and then want to take that stuff for themselves.
Of course.
So there was a game mechanic built in where after a few days of being on the surface, all of this gear just fell apart and it would just lose its magic, lose its abilities, lose its potency, everything. I don't know when the official explanation rolled around, like when it came up, but the Fairsres was this idea, and this is kind of getting back to their innate magic. It's sort of an alternative magic, but not really, because it's not, I don't think it's necessarily stated that it's part of the weave or part of the dark weave, but it's a sort of magical radiation that only exists after a certain depth underground. And because elves adapt to their surroundings and, you know, like wood elves look more wood elfy you know, stuff. The drow started basically being able to tap into the Fae's rest, this magical radiation. And then they started breeding for it specifically. And that's how you got your noble houses and your high priestesses and all that other shit. But the Fae, once it's away from the underground area, it gets onto the surface, it kind of loses its juice after a little while, and that stuff holds it together, and then it's gone. I don't know if a lot of people know that, because I, until I was going back and doing like this big refresher on the drow, I had completely forgotten about it.
I did not even know about it. I knew about it, and only because of like watching like old YouTube videos about the drow and stuff like that. But no, there's nothing like that anymore. They, a lot of the crazier aspects of making like a race, because like that I could see how that could become power creepy problematic very fast in the mind of anyone that plays 5e, because the drow have a different form of magic that can't exactly be countered, because it's this kind of magic opposed to that kind of magic. I could see all that happening instantaneously.
And it's now that I'm like digging into this alternate kind of magic that is magic but isn't magic, it explains their spell resistance, their innate ability with magic, why their gear is the way it is, and all this other stuff. And I don't know. I would really love to dig into the nature of that sometime and figure out what it is, because I feel like okay, so in Forgotten Realms, it exists, or it did at one point in time. I feel like if Corellon had known it was there, he wouldn't have sent them down there.
Corellon knew that, he would be like, nah, I'm not just going to make the drow stronger.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem later on, because they are, because drow, so this is how cool the drow are. Everyone hates the Mind Flayers, and the Mind Flayers hate everybody. Mm-hmm. But the Mind Flayer will work with the drow because of how dangerous the drow are. Yeah. They're like, let's just not make them angry. Let's just, like, you know, trade slaves back and forth with them, because that'll be useful.
I saw some recent things. I don't know if this is something they've dug into with 5th edition, but I saw some stuff where they're starting to talk about surface drow. Have you heard anything about that?
I heard about there being a whole new idea of a whole new way of talking about the way the drow exists in the world, like there were drows in the Arctic and all these different things, which am not exactly, like, I'm not against it, because more lore is more lore for me to listen to, so I'm already happy about that. But I'm just not used to the drow being an external species, you know. Like, I understand, like, there are drow that live on the surface and yada yada, but just seeing them like above land is going to be a little jarring for me, because of the fact that, like, I love the whole aspect of the drow being like removed and like separated and having like their own, like, very weirdly own way of doing things, because the drows don't play. Like, I remember this is something probably from an older house. Like, there was different sorts of houses in the drow society, and each had a different sigil that would give you various different abilities, you know? Yeah. So, let's say the Do'Urden sigil, it gave Dritz the ability to cast darkness at will, and it gave them ability to levitate. There were different sorts of things that each family of drows was given. They had dancing lights. Some of them had like the ability to throw shadow weapons, like use like shadow sword or shadow blade or something like that. And I like that idea of them being like, so just so they're just like, I like the idea of them being like pretty much alien elves in the sense of being so far, because think of it like this, they're so far off and so removed that they have a different name. They're not usually referred to, they're dark elves, but they're referred to more or less as drow opposed to dark elves.
Yeah. So one of the things that I want to, so when they do this surface drow, I kind of want to see them actually just call them dark elves instead of drow, because some of the really deep lore for the drow is that before they were called the Drow, they actually were just dark elves, and they did live on the surface, and they did kind of look like how they look now, and then they were a different thing. So they used to have, I want to say it's somewhere here in my notes here, because there was a place, their original city that they had. Because they had like these little city states back in during the time of dragons. So they come out, all elves come out of the Feywild. Dragons are running the show. The elves basically kind of set up their little city states and their own like little areas where they're hanging out. And then they start kind of getting close to like their times of like warfare, their kind of feudal period. The city is called, what is it? Illithiri. And that was basically where the dark elves were. And they're originally from like the jungle, apparently.
They were jungle dwelling elves? I didn't know that part.
Yeah, that's they were apparently from the jungle, or that was the area in which Illithiri was in. So Illithiri, they start doing their thing. They have like several different religions and cults at the time. Loth isn't really big at that time, but some of her, because she wasn't called Loth at the time. She was called, starts with an A, Arashni. That kind of sounds spidery. Right. That sounds spidery. So
sounds like her.
But yeah, it was her and Corellon, and they had kids, Illistre, the son, Veyron, or whatever. Illistre and Veyron had a bigger presence with the Dark Elves than Arashne did, because it was the Celandrine, all blah, 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 blah. You know, all this, you know, super crazy Tolkien level of detail. And what happened is over the years, elves are starting to war, all the city states start clashing, and you come to find out that these motherfucking dark elves have been kind of instigating the shit the whole time.
Yeah, that's that is the coolest, most also type thing ever.
Yeah,
it's like, what?
And so the elves get together and they're like, yo, we're gonna create a place where there's no dark elves allowed. And it's like, whoa guys. And eventually once Illithiri starts getting like more brazen about some of its corrupt shit, like Loth and some of the other things start to become more prominent, all the other deities get sort of pushed out if they're not part of this dark pantheon that they have. And they get more brazen about it. And it's like thousands of years. And finally, the rest of the elves are like, all right, you know what? You're done.
You guys are banished. Get out of here. Like,
get the fuck out of here. We're done. We're done with this shit. It's been thousands of years. And you guys just get worse every time.
You guys just keep causing trouble. Like, please stop just causing trouble. And then that's when they took the trip to the inside of the planet. And they all became... Well, actually, the majority of them became in servitude and patronage of Loth, but there is also actually a good underground dark elf god, which most people don't know very much about. I think her name is Sylvanas, right?
The good drow one is Illistre.
Illistre, there you go.
Yeah, she's... She's one of my favorites from a while back. I think she's cool. I think she's got kind of like a rebel quality in an evil society. But I hope that if they introduce these surface-dwelling dark elves, they don't rely on her too much. Mm-hmm. But way back when there was a cult of Illistre at that time, Illistre went into exile willingly with the rest of her family. Basically Loth, her brother, and the other dark pantheon. She went into exile willingly because she felt like if she didn't go, there would be no redemption for the drow down the road. It would be interesting if these surface dwelling drow that they're introducing coming up, these arctic ones and all these hidden ones, if they were an offshoot of those super early Dark Elves from way back that simply were not part of the Cult of Loth, because almost everyone who gets banished down into the Underdark is basically just this Cult of Loth that got out of hand. Mm-hmm. But you got to imagine back in the day of this city of Illithiri, that as this cult, this religion or whatever was rising to prominence, a lot of the people who didn't like how that was going would have left. They would have
that makes sense.
You know, been like, nah, we're not down with this whole like constant warfare shit, because that's the drow. It's constant fighting, constant struggle. Trying to get a status and station and pleasing Loth and bloodshed and backstabbing and lying.
They are a really I love how the drow society works, because it's actually an entirely matriarchal society. Mm-hmm. It's really crazy. It's just the women, the female houses leaders are entirely in control, and the men are just there to breed with and go fight and die for Loth. Like, that is all they do. But what's really cool is that the way that the drow take revenge, because they are, the thing about the drow's way of dealing with things is that if a drow and a drow fight, they have, like, if a house attacks another house, they have to completely destroy it. Mm-hmm. There can be no signs of life afterwards. Because yes,
completely it's scorched, like, earth.
You have to make it, there can be no survivors. There can be nothing. Because if there is, at that moment, that is you attacking your people, you know, and that is the mm-hmm. ultimate no-no for Loth. But if you can wipe everything away, you'll get praise from her. If you can completely, utterly destroy it. Because I remember in the Crystal Shard books, Dritz talks about how there was one time that they went and they destroyed a house, but there was one girl from the house still alive. Mm-hmm. And she revealed that she was still alive and who did it. And then that freaking family got destroyed. Loth pushed their freaking home off a mountain. And it was just like, oh.
Yeah, because you're expected to be a bad piece of shit. But it's like, you're not supposed to get caught. You know, exactly. Like, we value your ability to get away with it. So if you get caught, you're fucked.
They really do value them getting away. You have to get away with it, or else if you get caught, if your hands get caught in a cookie jar, you're going to have a very, very unlit time with the drow.
and everything revolves around that, because it's not just a societal thing. It's a theocracy thing. The Loth has so overwhelmed everything in the pantheon. Like, you've got the elven pantheon, which is the Seldarine, mm-hmm. and then you've got the Dark Seldarine. But unlike the Seldarine, Loth is basically it for the Dark Seldarine. You've got other deities, but they usually kind of like come and go, or they're like tiny little cults of disenfranchised people within drow society. So Vayron is the god of drow males. Mm-hmm. They're disenfranchised because of the matriarchal society, and basically in drow society, if you're not torturing and stepping on someone and just being, you know, really pushing someone down, you know, it's like, it's a form of, what would you say the word is here, like a self-validating sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If you aren't stepping on people and subjugating them, then are you really that powerful? You know, like,
that is as twisted as that sounds. It's just like, oh, that is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. That is the drow's philosophy. They are very much so geared and like forced towards, you gotta fuck everything up while you can fuck everything up.
Yeah,
you gotta be powerful.
And when you're doing it against other you know, races of the Underdark or whatever it is you're doing, it's like people need to see you, like the other drow need to see you being like the pinnacle of this cruelty. Because if they don't see it from you, they're going to assume you're weak and vulnerable, and then they're going to try and move on you. And then maybe you'll disappear in the night.
Yeah, maybe you'll just never, ever come back again.
It's just, it's
really crazy. I think I love this, the way they function, particularly in the Forgotten Realms. I actually know quite a, there's not a huge amount of information, but there is information about the drow in my personal favorite setting, Eberron. Mm-hmm. Within Eberron, the drow are actually, and surprisingly to know that, they're actually a jungle-dwelling race there too. They were the initial slaves of the giants in the continent of Stormreach, if I'm not mistaken. That is where the drows were. But like, whenever you go to Stormreach in the Eberron world, which is like sort of like Stormreach, if you know D&D, think of the tropical jungle where there are a bunch of zombies and dinosaurs. That is Stormreach is. Very similar to the Chult, actually, in the Forgotten Realms. And there you go to that giant island and you find a ton of dark elves who have been, I don't know if they're exactly tainted in that context, but I know that they're like very, very, very tribalistic and not nice.
Yeah, as far as I remember, they're a bit on the xenophobic side, but the way that they conduct themselves kind of varies from tribe to tribe. So any rules that you basically learned in your encounter with one tribe, you probably can throw out for an encounter with the next tribe, because
they're native to Zendric. Actually, I just opened my Eberron book. They're native to Zendric, and they are similar to the belief in the love of the spider goddess. They have the love of Vel'Koz, the scorpion god.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the one played by Dwayne the Rock Johnson, right?
Yeah, Scorpion King. And they were actually they were enslaved by the giants, and during the time of the Darkar, which are pretty much like, imagine like the Mind Flayers, but like on steroids and from the Plane of Madness. They came in and they destroyed all of giant society. And while giants were trying to get a leg back up, the drows were like, nope, we're revolting too. So
like, no, we're this is our shot. We're taking our shot.
So they are a place rife with just problems and a lot of getting on. But I adore it. I love them in every situation.
In the Mystara campaign, they're basically, they don't have a central worship of Loth, and they're not really heavily matriarchal or warlike. Aside from living underground and being warped by a strange magic, that's it. That's the main. It's almost like a what if like, they went down into the dark, but Loth for some reason didn't take over. You know, like that's kind of like, that would be the most basic way I could describe the drow of Mystara. But Mystara is one of those, again, one of those campaign settings where it's like, it was big in, let's say, the 70s or 80s, and now it's practically non-existent. I don't think, there might be a few adventures from that campaign setting that got reprinted for posterity or reported over to Forgotten Realms, but Mystara is almost completely extinct
at this point. Is super crazy to me, because I only know about Mystara in like context of just simply, I learned about a bunch of settings and they were like, there's also Mystara, because I know a bit about Planescape, and Planescape it teaches you about how everything is within a crystal shard or the crystal sphere.
Yeah.
And then everything within a crystal sphere, there you can literally get a spelljammer and go from Mystara to Eberron, from Eberron to Owarth, and back and forth. And I was just like, what? There's so many worlds. But there's actually a few worlds that are cut off. Like, obviously, Dark Sun. No one can get to Dark Sun.
Yeah, you can't get to Dark Sun. That one's, no one. Oh, man, I forgot about Dark Sun. I don't even know what the status of the drow is in Dark Sun.
I don't think there are drow in Darkson, actually. I think because of how many races were murdered out Hell in yeah. Darkson, I don't think they're a drow. I don't think they had time to evolve into that.
Darkson's such a brutal campaign setting, too.
Yeah.
Other drow in Darkson. Darkson Player's Guide. I don't see... I'm not really seeing anything off the top of my head. I completely forgot about drow. I don't think they're in Darkson, because I want to say even elves, like regular elves.
There are there are elves in Darkson, but they are super, super different from elves in general. Like they are like wildly different. They're unbelievably lazy.
Yeah.
And they sleep for like pleasure. the most athletic and dexterous human is as dexterous as the most incapable elves. Dexterity is unbelievable, unfathomable compared to other like races, and they are super, super, super like they scam everybody. Like, they're just, like, scammers. Like, it's a part of their culture to, like, if you can possibly get someone to spend more money on something or take advantage of someone in some sort of deal, you have to do it. It's wild how different they are in that world.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I would love to... we're going to have to dig into Darkson at some point, because that one is so wild. That one is so different from a lot of the other fantasy things. I really like it.
I would love to play a Darkson campaign, but I just don't know if I'm capable of dealing with the stress of it.
Yeah.
It's just such an unbelievably unforgivable campaign setting.
Oh yeah. It's the vibe I got from Darkson when I briefly played in a campaign of it way back was it had a very Conan the Barbarian kind of feel to it.
Yeah, actually like extremely so.
Yeah, because it's very unforgiving. There's not a lot of resources, super low magic, you know. It's interesting. It's a post-apocalyptic fantasy thing, which is
everything's dying. Like everything's dying. Everyone is like hurting because of the complete rancidness of the world. It's so jarring in like a kind of like, whoa, this is like a whole world that's just in pieces. Like people don't use metal armor because like we're not getting too much into it, but pretty much metal armor is not useful because the sun is blaring all the time and it's a gigantic red leather sun and
bone.
Yeah, because metal armor is hard to find, one, and then two, it's like not useful. And then in that world the magic they take is directly from the planet, so they use so much magic they pretty much killed the sun and the planet is just like like this.
It's wild.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's so unlike some of the other ones. The other one that I was looking at that's also weird for Dark Elves is Dragonlance in the world of Kryn. Now, Dragonlance is an interesting one because the Dark Elves of Dragonlance are not consistent. Like in my notes, I literally wrote because they're not consistent. And I think the reason for that is because the thing we were talking about earlier, where people have kind of like this preconception of what the Dark Elves are, and then that's not what they are everywhere. So you would get people who would come over and write something for Dragonlance because Dragonlance was big in its novel thing. You know, I played maybe one campaign of Dragonlance they had a whole box set, but I only played once. But the novels were what a lot of people were really digging into because it had like that high romantic fantasy feel to it, just that kind of like. And so, but drow were not really a big part of it. They wanted to center dragons in Dragonlance and other dragon.
Yeah, the dragon and god wars going on in Kryn, because Kryn is another place full of just like. Kryn is like, imagine they put D&D's magic in Game of Thrones. That is the best way to describe Dragonlance for me. And it's just like, it's so much like espionage and like houses warring, and like these characters who are like not exactly involved with the houses, and they're trying to, it's, Kryn is also another like a wacky freaking world. Like every D&D setting has like something crazy about it. Eberron has like genuinely like thousand year wars going on, mm-hmm. to the point that they've developed like magic and like proper like railroads and flying vehicles. Kryn has like house wars and house factions. Ravenloft has the mist and like people getting put. Every D&D setting has their own like thing, and Kryn's is just like family blood wars. That's like Kryn's whole thing.
For a long time, Ravenloft was just pulling things from Dragonlance and Forgotten Realms. And it was just,
I remember hearing about that
kind of world that was just kind of pulling things in. The Dragonlance Dark Elves are basically a status that you earn when you're exiled. Like, you fucked up so bad that they kick you out and you are now a Dark Elf. And then you're anathema to everybody else, which is a total different thing. But you're not supposed to necessarily look different. But again, you had writers coming in from like Forgotten Realms or Greyhawk or whatever, and they would describe these Dark Elves as being like those other Dark Elves. And then, sorry, for whatever reason, no one caught it. And then, you know, you'd get the people who created Dragonlance coming in being like, no, that's not how they look.
That's not them.
That's not Dark Elves. So they had to go and do some retcons at some point where they're like, oh, well, maybe these are the Dark Elves from Faerun.
Oh, like they came in
somehow. And that's what happens, dude.
Because even in Forgotten Realms lore, a lot of people don't know this, but the orcs are not native to the Forgotten Realms at all.
Yeah.
Like, orcs should not, like, Grummish and all of them are not from the Forgotten Realms. They're from a completely different world that it just ended up there, but they breed like wildfire, so there's so many orcs all over the place.
Yeah. They're just this big problem that the elves have been dealing with since fucking time immemorial.
Yeah. Orcs and elves, man. It's,
Yeah.
It is just hatred back and forth between those two.
Now, the last one that I'm going to mention for difference in Dark Elves is Galarian. Now, Galarian is technically Pathfinder, but it was part of D&D for a little while, because the whole Pathfinder thing was originally a campaign setting for D&D until the fourth edition, and they split ways and all this other stuff. So in Galarian, it's interesting that the Dark Elves are still sort of like, oh, you're banished into the Underdark. They don't call it the Underdark, but, you know, banished to the... But one interesting thing about the Dark Elves in Galarian is that I don't think that this other surface-dwelling races are supposed to know about the Dark Elves. Like, they're a fixture in the Darklands, but other surface-dwelling races are not supposed to know about them. They're like the dirty secret of elvenkind. Like, they don't talk about them. They don't mention it. They don't want people knowing that this is a thing, that this is a problem. Because
that makes sense.
When they banished them, it was more of a condition. It was something that they developed in a very short period of time. So rather than drow being a thousands of years old, removed, bred for perfection with this mysterious magic thing, they're not that far removed from elvenkind, and elves don't want people to know that. So it's supposed to be a thing where elves know that dark elves exist, but no one else is supposed to know, except for, of course, you know, people living underground who encounter them all the time. So I thought that was kind of interesting. They don't have Loth in Pathfinder because they can't. It's a Wizards of the Coast thing. So in Pathfinder, they worship like these arch... I don't think it's... Is it devils or demons? One of the fiends, like the high tier fiends.
There's the devils, the arch... Well, no, are there arch fiends too?
Demons? In Pathfinder, demon princes. Yeah, they classify fiends as being like an umbrella term for demons, daemons, and devils. And I can't remember which one the Dark Elves worship. I want to say it's demons, but I don't...
In Pathfinder, does demon mean like crazy, I'll eat your face? Or does demon mean like
crazy? Mean I'll eat like, your face.
Okay, good, because that's how it is in D&D. D&D, devils want to make deals and take your souls. Demons are I'll eat your face and use your bones to decorate my like groin. Same. Like they're like very don't ink like if you're playing D&D, just don't deal with demons. Yeah. Just don't deal with demons. Like they're bad news.
In Pathfinder, they have a third categorization called daemons, which are, instead of being lawful evil or chaotic evil, they're just neutral evil.
Okay, so they're up to anything.
Yeah, they're just doing bad stuff for the sake of being bad. They'll use a contract if it furthers the purpose of evil, or they'll go on a rampage if it furthers the purpose of evil, you know, whatever they're kind of feeling. So...
daemons are bad. Stay like just stay away from fiends, man.
Yeah, don't mess with them.
don't bother that's with me.
An important public service announcement.
Just
from Legends and Lore.
If you're playing D&D and you can avoid dealing with fiends, don't deal with fiends and don't deal with mind flayers. Everything else potentially it can end up good for you, but those two just don't do it.
those are the fuck around and find out. The drow are interesting to me right now because you've got kind of like this controversy that's sort of sprung up around them and orcs and some of the other like quote evil races. And one of the things that I think will kind of keep the drow sort of as they are, like retaining their identity, is this kind of new thing that they're doing where they're doing like, oh, the surface drow, oh yeah, all the guys down there in the Underdark, they're all like a whole race that spun off from a single cult, you know. And that suddenly makes more sense, because then you're talking about indoctrination, you're talking about conditioning, like mental and physical conditioning. They were,
which makes sense. It makes sense for the fanatical behaviors of the drow, actually.
Yeah, even drow who do not want to do evil have to do evil lest they get snuffed out, you know.
That's why Dritz himself, he escaped, he left, because he was like, if I stay here, I don't like hurting people, they're gonna kill me. So he left.
Yeah.
He escaped and left in the dark.
It's like, I'm done. I'm done with this.
So, yeah, the thing about... Now, I have a particular view about when it comes to evil races in D&D, or races being like, this race is naturally dumber or smarter or anything like that. I personally, coming from the new end of D&D, I don't like the idea like, oh, this race has a -3 in intelligence, like the whole orcs thing. About orcs as being naturally dumber. I would just say that's kind of, I never really liked the idea of that, because that just feels kind of weird that this race is just dumber than every other race. And I understand that, like, it's because orcs are, you know, they never education, but they never really like education, like academic and arcane information is not really a thing done for them. But if an orc lived in society, it would just be as smart as a regular person probably would be, you know? So I
think that, in previous editions, those stat boosts made sense, because the building your character was a two-step process. It was race and class. But now we've gotten to a point in the editions, even Pathfinder has done this, where it's no longer a two-step process. It's a three or a four-step process, where instead of it just being race and class, you have race, class, or I think Pathfinder calls them ancestries for the races. But you race, class, and then background.
Yeah.
And background is what makes sense, because if you have a society that doesn't value academics, okay, yeah, a penalty to intelligence makes sense. If you have a society that is fiercely, like crazy zealots and xenophobic and stuff like that, that's going to color your alignment and things like that.
I agree.
So that makes sense. But now that we're in this kind of era of role-playing games where you have race, class, and then background, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have some of those things built into the race section. It doesn't make sense. Like for elves, okay, yeah, they're lithe and nimble because they're built willowy and graceful.
That's a physical property, you know. Like that's
it's a physical property.
Like that's like a human. Humans have our particular physical copy. That's like how orcs have their particular physical fallacies. But if you take an orc lives in a city, an orc wouldn't be dumber than an elf that lived in a city, exactly. They lived the same life. It would just be one's an orc and one's an elf. So that's why I understand the removal of that aspect of the game. I was like, all right, cool. I understand. I get it. You know, like this, it's everything is being different. The thing I like and don't like about, I have a, because when it comes to elves, elves are very magical. Like they are a creature from the Feywild. So their
some of their code, nature is almost kind of like dictated to them by something else.
Yeah.
Like it's not like our world. They're from somewhere else.
They're from like a canonically unstable place. Like the Feywild doesn't make sense. You know, like in the Feywild, you can walk forward for hours and not go anywhere, or you could take two steps forward and you'll end up miles and miles away, you know? So that unstable nature, that relatively unstable nature probably helps them adapt so much. That's why there's sea elves. That's why there's elves from the, then there's dark elves. That's why there's wood elves. That's why there are elves that are, they vary. They've genuinely vary so much.
For so long that's true. When you look at it, a lot of that stuff happens within a generation or two. You know, when we're talking about like, oh yeah, the drow went down there and the dark elves went down, and within 1,000 years, they were this totally different thing. 1,000 is a long time for humans, but that's just a couple generations for elves.
1,000 so is like a human life relative to an elf. That's another thing that's brought up in like the Salvatore books. It's a blink of an eye for them. Yeah. Like an elf is considered an adult. Around 120 years old is considered an adult elf.
Yeah. A human that stands out to them is like a huge novelty, you know, because they're like, oh, wow, that's you're actually worth my attention.
Yeah, it is weird because
lifespan.
Because think of it like this. The older people get, the more time becomes a blur. Isn't just how it works, you know, because imagine when you're 16, you know. You've only lived 16 years, you know, and probably a bunch of those years are not even really coherent. So every year, every day just seems like a long time. When you get up to like your 50s, you've lived how many days? You know, like a day is nothing. An hour is a fleeting moment for you. So it's just, it's hard to grasp that for thousands.
I just turned 36 and I've got kids, and, you know, sometimes, you know, my eldest will come in, she'd be like, when's lunch? And I'll be like, oh, in an hour. And she'd be like, an hour? Oh my God. She'll like act like, you know, I'm starving her, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I could barely get anything done in an hour.
Exactly, like, dude. It's so weird.
That's not enough time to do anything.
Like, I'm coming up on 28 now. And for me, I remember saying, wow, I'm going to be in high school someday. When I was like in third grade, and I'm just like, bro, high school ended 10 years ago for me. That's just a why. It's so, imagine that, but times an extreme where you live, like even in Eberron, right? Eberron had the wars, the giant continental wars, right? But for a lot of the elves that live, the elves were like, oh, you guys have only known the time of wars, but we've been around long enough that we knew well before that. Like my dad could tell me about hundreds of years before this war happened, and that's just insanity.
One of the things I've had come up in some campaigns is the concept of the deities, of the gods, and why they don't just necessarily get involved with things like, oh, if this is a problem, why doesn't so-and-so just come down and slap it down? And there's a lot of good reasons why that's not how it works with gods. In Forgotten Realms, they actually do it fairly often.
They get involved,
They get involved fairly often, but it's when you look at the scale that they're operating at, how old are the gods? You got to think that, like, by the time something becomes a problem to the notice of a god, right, five generations of your family have been born
long,
and died.
Long dead. It's so freaking, it's so jarring that, yeah, that's like the truth. Like, I understand that, like, this is really, because imagine that, like, imagine being a deity that is relatively for every purpose. You live forever. There's not going to be a time when you're not going to be living, right? Mm-hmm. And imagine this person is like, everything's so terrible down here. Everything's going on. And you're like, I'm lucky I turned the screen for this moment. I'm lucky I was looking at the screen and I turned to that very point, because I would have looked over your whole entire surname.
Your entire, like, I would have existence.
Never, like, your people that your everyone in your bloodline could have lived and died to the point that you can't even tell people who are related to, right, you. But I just saw this moment. It's
and
jarring.
And that's on top of, like, all the other shit that they're dealing with. Like, if
all
you're
the
god,
prayers.
Or, like, if you're the god of the sun, it's like, my main area of concern is the sun.
Like, I don't have time to worry about, oh, this person, there's not rain here.
Yeah. So when you think about this kind of stuff, you're like, wow, like, these big kind of, like, aloof, dignified elves, whether they're elves or drow, it's like, wow, they go through these changes in a very quick amount of time for something that's so long-lived. Like, they change oddly fast. Like, you'll get people be like, oh, human society changes very quickly. And it's like, yeah, but that's over the course of six generations. Elves do it in two.
Literally. And two, sometimes less, because of the whole entire story about the Shatterkai. The Shatterkai, mm-hmm, it took like 500 years. They were in the Shadowfell, and they just became like emotionless elves. And it's, mm-hmm, like, what? That is just so, it's so, elves in general as a species are so, we have to do a whole elves episode where we go through all of them.
Yeah. And just talk about kind of like the wild stuff. Because I feel like drow have lost a little bit of their edge with some players who have been in this for a long time, but the elves also have lost their overall kind of awe, you know, mm-hmm, because like I said, it's just a couple generations where they change, and you've got these things that are kind of ruled by the nature of a thing, you know.
That's very true.
Wood elves are very much, their primary concern is the forest. Everything else, is it in my forest? No,
it's
care.
Not. Then I don't really care that much.
And the drow are kind of the same way, if you think about it, but it's not nature necessarily that changed them. It was a creature. It was a, what do they call them in Forgotten Realms? Tanari, who is Loth.
Mm-hmm.
Warps them and changes them and turns them into this creature that is singularly concerned with just her one agenda, and that's it. That's all.
But, but what's also crazy is that you realize that it's more of a zealotry-esque thing,
mm-hmm,
because a lot of, in what you hear when you go through the Crystal Shard, you realize a lot of them are like, I do this because we're supposed to do this.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, this isn't right. And then they're like, what?
Yeah, you get really? someone like Dritz, who's like, nah, what if we did something else? And all the drow are like what?
Like, what do you mean something else?
What do you mean
there's
something
else? and it's like, yes, it's a lot of something else. And he's like, dude, you're tripping right now. You're drunk. Dritz, go home. Smoke some weed and they come back to me, because it's just crazy, because they're the way, it's just such an alien mentality for them. I just think, mm-hmm, of them as like the alien, like, this is how life works here, but to everyone, yeah, else in the universe, they're like, bro, you guys are tripping the fuck out.
Yeah, and that's why you got some of these other deities within their pantheon that struggle so much, because Loth runs everything, but, mm-hmm, she's got two kids in the pantheon. You've got Veyron and Illistre. Mm-hmm. Veyron, god of the male drow, which I mentioned earlier, evil activity, messing with the surface, thievery, stuff like that. Illustrae is the goddess of beauty, dance, song, moonlight, sword dancing, hunting, stuff like that. They're very different, and they're very different from Loth in general. Even Veyron, who's, you know, not a good deity, is still pretty different from Loth, and the idea that he, even as evil as he is, proposes this idea of equality, of men are the same as women and women are the same as men. And that is so crazy different from how the rest of their society is that it's almost abhorrent. You know, they're like, oh, and it's one of the only things that he differs from Loth on. Almost everything else, they're kind of simpatico. A lot of the stuff overlaps.
Yeah, they are. They're very like samey in that particular like way they handle things.
Yeah. And it's just that one thing that is the huge difference. And it's like, no, we can't tolerate that. And Illustrae is, of course, way outside of the norm. And I think she's, even though she's kind of mentioned a lot in the lore, I think she's got the smallest presence and following of all the drow.
She does. Deities. She has by far the smallest because of the fact that if you follow her, Loth might just have you wiped out of existence. So people are just like, look, kid, you get some traction, you come back to me, we'll talk about it. But until you do that, then I am not on your team.
I think, like, I think even Ganador was originally supposed to be like a god of like slimes and outcasts and shit like that. I think he's got more followers than Illustrae.
Yeah, dude. Because think of how vastly outside the box she is as a character. She's like way different from them. And she's let's just like dance and have fun and not murder. And
imagine trying to like go to some other drow in the Underdark and being like, hey, I'm the goddess of the moon. And they're like, the what?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, the what?
You mean the top? You mean the top of the hole we live in?
Wait, there's a top above the top? What are you even talking about?
Exactly. That's just some of the most, that's how it's so magical and how wonky like that the worlds of D&D are, because like this is gonna be a little too like preachy maybe, but like think of how crazy those worlds are, and there's still like nations of so many different kinds of people walking around and working together and living. And then look at how simple this rock is, and how much we just fuck up everything. And we can't just get over these small problems. Like, on Earth, at least as far as I know, you don't have to worry about like a demonic incursion. That the longer it exists, the worse it gets, and it's the harder to get demons off this plane of existence. And we can't even decide who can run a nation, you know, like we're just arguing about that. It's just like, this is just so unbelievable that it's almost moments where I'm like, I'm too stressed to play D&D. I'm just gonna live in the real world and do my calculus homework, you know.
Oh man. Just, yeah, I can't
right now.
I think the word my wife uses for it is whimsical. Whimsical the worlds are. The more whimsical a world is, the more she loves it. That's what she wants out of the. So if you get a world, and I forget which campaign setting it is, it has like two moons. Oh, that's chef's kiss right there. Two moons. A world that you live on that has two moons. It's not sci-fi. The moons are just there as if, you know, it's normal and they've always been there. I know Elder Scrolls has something like that. They have like two moons. But I mean, that's a cool little whimsical detail, you know. But a lot of the stuff that the drow have, I mean, when Gygax originally tossed out this dark elf thing, he was basically, Gygax pulled most of his material from mythology, you know.
I'd imagine. And
like Paizo making Pathfinder, they try to go back to that, you know, try and pull stuff from mythology. But Gygax was the dude who did it first, or at least for the games that we have. He pulled from mythology, he pulled from Tolkien, he borrowed a lot of that stuff, and he was very, like, he didn't he had no qualms about it. He's like, nah, I just borrowed it from, you know, whatever. It's fine. You know, we're playing a game. We're having fun. You know, he didn't get too crazy about it. And so he comes up with the, you know, this dark elf thing, spins it off of the original kind of elf mythology and all this other stuff from, you know, where he originally pulled it. I think it's like a Germanic, or is it Norse? Is it Germanic or Norse? Someone I know in the comments going to have to tell me.
Wolves are Norse.
Yeah.
Elves are. Well, no, there are elves in Norse mythology. So
I know that
Norse.
They're called like the Alfar, and I can't remember if that's Norse or Germanic, but I remember the dark elves are a thing in the mythology. And, you know, he just kind of took that idea and he was, but in his world, in Gygax's D&D world, elves resemble where they live. So mm-hmm. he's like, oh, these ones live underground. They have black skin. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, that's racially charged.
These guys are bad. And I can get why that could be a little confusing.
Dark skin and the bad guys. But like when Gygax is like, no, but like the wood elves have green. So he's, you know, I think maybe.
Elves have green skin. These elves have blue skin.
Yeah.
And he's also, most black people aren't the color black. And they're like, oh. And people are like,
I don't know if you noticed,
Gary.
but Wesley Snipes is pretty, you know.
He's pretty dark and he's still brown.
And he's still brown. A shade of brown. He is not obsidian black or purple. It's not the same. But, you know, I get where, you know, people are kind of coming from. And when I'm like, oh, yeah, and then the dark elves originally came from the jungle, I'm like,
Ooh, sorry, bud.
We're getting into uncomfortable territory. That's.
And you're just like, oh, man. Well.
So as much as I am kind of like, you know, everyone wants to be like, oh, the PC police are rolling in. I get it. In this instance, I totally get it.
In this and, one moment,
I totally get it.
See how people could be a little confused. Yeah.
I understand it was not Gygax's intention. I understand that almost everybody along the way probably did not have bad intentions. But going back and being like, okay, we're not going to say everyone with dark skin is bad. That's a cult. That's different. I really like that because the seeds for that, the story seeds, mm-hmm. exist within the lore. They're not just pulling it out of their ass. They're not just saying, oh, we're going to do this because we're worried about how it's going to look. They looked back into the lore and they're like, oh, actually, there's some opportunity.
This could work. And I like the idea that, like, oh, this could be something. Like, we could turn this into, like, something pretty awesome. And I like the idea of that.
Yeah. I think it works best for Forgotten Realms. I don't know how you spin it for Greyhawk or some of the other ones, because Greyhawk is like, the origin story is more vague, and it's like, oh yeah, they had a difference of opinion, and so the ones that were evil turned black and went underground, or went underground and turned black, or and then Loth may have been the one that tempted them, or maybe she, you know, it's not very specific. And it's just, it's kind of like got that old school kind of Mormon thing, you know, because you know what I'm talking about, right? Where they're like, oh yeah, marked their flesh with sin, and I'm like, ah, no, that's garbage. What Forgotten Realms is doing, not garbage. What even Eberron is doing, not entirely garbage. So
I don't hate this. This is fine. But like, you know, guys, you hear me?
Yeah, you kind of. We got a lot of people now who aren't just like, you know, white nerds in their mother's basement throwing dice at paper now. Like, you got a huge group
of
people
wild,
now,
dude. Like,
who are picking up 5th edition and stuff and playing this. And
yeah,
they want to see more of themselves. You know, they want to see, you know, and that was one thing I really loved about Pathfinder is that I crack open the book and it's just like, yeah, okay, we got male characters, female characters. We got dark, light skin. We got purple. We got green. You got gay. You got straight. Whatever. And they didn't like. It wasn't like they threw their arm out, patting themselves on the back, doing it.
That's true. Yeah,
it was just the best there. Thing about it, they're just like, it's there. It's an alternate history. It doesn't have to follow our thing. It didn't. It's fine. Everyone's fine with it. Like you've.
Ooh, that's what makes and it then, so amazing.
If they want to make an area seem worse, like they're really evil, they'll just include some of that shit in their society. They'll be like, oh yeah, they're bigots over there. Yikes. Yeah.
They don't like anybody.
They don't like
it's
anybody.
Real not, it's real not super lit awesome over there. They're racist. It's like, oh nice.
Can you imagine? Oh. But it's kind of an interesting concept for a fantasy world where it's like, oh, this isn't the default condition. Like, that's a bad thing. Everyone pretty much agrees it's bad.
It's so weird because, like I don't know, like, and I say this on Twitter jokingly all the time, but how could you look at a mind flare and be like, that could be my friend? You know, like, no. Get that away from me. I don't want to be near that thing. Yeah. It has its mouth is a circle and it's full of teeth. I don't want to talk to that. It's like trying to be friends with a tiefling after, you know, your town was there, fell into Elturel, you know, fell into Avernus, and you're just like, oh yeah, there are tieflings here. It's like, bro, I don't hate you, but the last thing I saw that had flaming eyes and horns ate my daughter. You know, so I'm gonna be respectful. I'm gonna be cordial, but like, please don't raise your voice around me because I'm gonna get scared.
Yeah, it's just those kinds of things. You get a little edgy, I really like this idea that they're putting out there where they're like, no, we're gonna emphasize the fact that these people were conditioned to be this way. They are not. If you had took a drow baby, like out of the Underdark as a baby, and just gave it to some elven parents, it just act like an elf, you know.
Yeah.
And if it was with some wood elves, within a couple generations, you wouldn't even know that it had a drow ancestor.
It might be able to use a little weird of magic. That's it. Like, oh, yeah. It might be able to cast darkness.
Yeah.
It's like, and oh, that's strange.
That's assuming that it stays in their blood for long, because I mean, once they get away from, you know, that weird Underdark radiation, that's name we still cannot say, the Fazrez. Yeah, it's like if they're far away from that for a while, they might even not even have that. It might just be a skin thing that goes away, because I can't imagine that. That was an issue way because the timeline for Forgotten Realms is so long. It's like negative 10,000 or negative 20,000.
Massive, dude.
It's so long. Because
I know that the what was the name, the mystery? No, the play. What is the second sundering or the third sundering where the freaking people fell off, where all the flowing islands fell off the sky? What was it called again? The
Happen during the, is that the fourth edition spell plague, or
is that a spell plague? I think it's where the guy, that wizard, makes all of the floating islands fall and then kills Mistra, and then magic goes crazy for a year or two. that happened so long ago that like the people in the world, like there are humans that genuinely have no clue that happened.
Yeah, they have. When we eventually do an episode on Mistra, I am going to bitch to high heaven about spell plague stuff, because when that shit rolled out on fourth edition, I was like, what?
I know, this makes you so mad. I think it's hilarious.
I get so mad about it.
Funniest.
She was my favorite for the longest time. I would be like, yo, I'm playing a wizard and she worships Mistra. And everyone's like, yeah, we know. Like, we get it.
You didn't surprise anybody. You're just like, whatever, shut up.
And then they killed her. And I was like, well, now what am I going to fucking do?
I understand what you mean, dude. Don't fret.
We'll get to that eventually, and then I'll get heated about it. I think the only thing we didn't discuss for Drow is some of their notable locations, but really, those are worth episodes of their own. Menzo Branzen, and then the original city that they had, their original capital, Luthdrier, I think is how it's pronounced. That place, it got wiped off the map, as far as I know. I don't think it exists in newer editions anymore. It was the capital. It's not anymore, I don't think. Which is I think insane. That's basically where Gonador's, like, he has, like, an avatar that just chills down there in the mud. And I think that's all that's left down there is the nice. Ruins. And this nice. Dude's, like, avatar chilling in the mud.
Just chilling in the gunk, having a good time.
Yeah, and then Menzo Branzen, which is, like, the big one that, you know, everyone's going to know from the various books and stuff. So Menzo Branzen is one. We've got so many of these things that are going to touch on Dritz. It's going to feel like we're obsessed with him. I actually am relatively indifferent to the character myself. Like, I'm relatively indifferent to Dritz. I know he's, like, your big thing.
You're crazy. You're just crazy, but it's cool. I understand. Everyone like, is a little, you know.
Like, I don't have the hate for him that some people do. I used to be like, oh yeah, here comes another, you know, because, you know, the online role playing thing, you get someone who wouldn't even just make a surface drow. They would just be like, yo, I'm Dritz. I'm just Dritz. I'm a dual wielding drow ranger.
I got a pet. His name is Cat. I can't pronounce Guinevere's real name, so his name is Cat. Yeah. We're going from here. Just like, all right, dude. Thanks, I guess.
Yeah. So I don't have that same, attachment to Dritz, but I don't hate him either. But that being said, because I have sort of this sort of indifference, one of the things I want to wrap up this episode with is earlier when I was opening the Forgotten Realms thing. Legends of the Forgotten Realms. I opened up to Dritz and I kind of was like, oh, it's too bad Sween's not here to see this. Like, you know. But one thing that I want to end this on is I have no intention of keeping that card.
When
I send out that thing that I'm going to be sending off to you guys, I'm going to be including that card in.
That is so cool, the package. You, dude.
Yeah, because
awesome.
Like I said, I don't have that connection to the character. Like, I'm not super, I don't know. I don't identify with him. He doesn't inspire me the way that some other characters do or the way he inspires you. So I figure a better home for that card is going to be wherever you're at. So I'm going to be sending that out to you when I send that other stuff.
That is super dope of you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's funny because along with that, another one of our DM for our current D&D campaign bought me a Dritz statue, which is hilarious.
Oh, man. Your room's going to be pretty, pretty dope by the time get that new place, too.
When I finally move in with my girlfriend, it's going to be just a bunch of Dritz. I'm just gonna be like, who is this black guy with white hair and a panther? And I'll be like, you'll understand one day, sweetheart.
Get it someday. But yeah, I took a little time to kind of lord it over you, you know, just have my moment. But I fully intended, like, even before I bought the box, I was like, oh, if I pulled this, I'm going to send it out to him.
That is super dope of you, bud. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I told my wife about it. I was like, yeah, I'll probably send it out just because, you know, he cares more about this than I do. I got the stuff that I wanted out of this. Like, I got Tiamat. Tiamat's awesome. Tarrasque. The Tarrasque is pretty sick. I mean, I'm not unhappy with my pulls, and so I want to share the love a little bit. So that'll be kind of like, that'll be the note that I want to end this on, something super positive, because the drow in general
are not very positive.
I don't want to leave people on the note of, like, these, you know, super mean step on me leather mommies who are just out there to absolutely annihilate anyone who's a dude and not a drow.
they're the anti of like male strength, like super jockey bros, would just get ran over by female drows because they are hurting people.
I really gotta wonder if maybe this came from maybe a certain fetish place for some of these writers. I don't
know. Could you imagine if it was like a asphyxiation for like black women? It just came, it just trickled down to being what the drow are now. We're like, what? That comes out one day and we're like, yo, I knew it, right? It makes sense.
this super complex society of evil characters and like complex psychology and theocracy. It's like, nah, man, I just thought black women were hot and in leather.
I wanted them to step on
me. Like, come on, man. Like,
what?
My kid's playing a drow character. What are you doing?
You ruined my household, dude. Like, what's your deal?
All right. So, is there anything else that you want to mention before
I should stop mentioning stuff now. Just about quit mentioning whatever comes to my mind. And just give a thank you to everybody. We appreciate all the viewership and listening to this. Is another episode 3, right?
This is episode 3. We're going to have an episode 4 poll go up in a couple days. Mm-hmm. We're up on Spotify now. We have the thing on YouTube. I have other things that I'm looking into. Again, Apple, the iTunes stuff, you have to make a whole separate thing for it. Their bar is higher.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has a specific service that they're using for podcasts that they listen to and they want to have Legends and Lore on it, let us know in the comments of either the YouTube thing or on our Twitter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see if I can make it happen. But the iTunes thing, we do know about that one already. We're working on it.
We'll get it there as soon as possible, we promise.
Yep. So otherwise, just follow, subscribe, whatever the function is that lets you know that new episodes are coming out, and let us know what you think. We always, you know, want to hear from you guys. We love hearing what you think.
Mm-hmm.
My audio now is not bad the way it was the last episode. It's embarrassing, like, why it was so bad, like the reason I figured out. So I'm not going to tell you quite yet. I'm not ready for that kind of public shaming.
Oh, not quite. Not quite.
Not quite ready.
Not quite yet.
All right. So so with that, we will see you on the next one.
All right. Later, guys. Take care. And yeah, later.